You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Hi, my name is Johnny. I just read your article about the Ozfest Challenge or whatever that horrid show was called. My band, we were pretty much struggling and DIYing everything, you know, booking our own shows across the East Coast. And we were like, why not? Let's try this as soon as we saw this thing. And when we got the contract, it was several pages long. And I come from a family who's used to legalese. And when me and the band and my father sat down and started reading through this thing, we were like, what? You know, like, it wasn't just like that the members of bands would be a quote unquote gopher, but it was humiliating. It was basically like the girls gone wild for musicians. And it's very sad that anybody was, you know, in a position where they were that desperate to get onto a stage. You know, I associate Ozfest with Neurosis, not debut, but big stage debut. And then the bands just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I was like, man, I'm so glad we opted out of all that garbage. But yeah, interesting article. I'd love to talk to you guys. You write like a real journalist. I'm a music journalist as well. Rock and roll. Bye.
Well, boy howdy, it's another episode of the Toiled of Hell radio show, and god damn it, it's good to be back. I am Joe Thrash and Kill, and with me I've got my good friend 365 Days of Horror, which we will now call Jordan throughout the rest of the show. How's it going, Jordan?
Well, it's good you're calling me Jordan, because that's my name. Yeah. It'd be weird if you were calling me something else, like, I don't know, Gertrude or something.
I'd call you Gertie for short, probably.
Well, that's because we're friends.
Right. You know, we've got that familiarity. I figure before we get into this episode, we should unpack a bit from our last episode. Pause this episode right now. Go back and listen to our last episode if you haven't heard it yet, because you should be keeping up with everything. There's a continuity here. We're telling a story that is 200 episodes long.
Straight line.
Last week, we watched the 2004 MTV2 reality television program Battle for Ozfest. And what was surprising to me about that is that I think everybody that was associated with that program reached out to us about it.
We got more responses from people that were on the show than I think people that actually watched the show.
Definitely. We opened up the show. We got a voicemail from a guy that had taken a look at the paperwork to be on the show and decided against it. We got comments from, and I'm sorry to say it, the guy that we called Fat and Bald.
We'll all be there soon enough, Jesse.
I know. Sorry, Jesse. Also,
you're ahead of the curve.
You're lucky that we called you the Fat Bald Guy instead of the guy that got kicked off the show for going after underage girls. So, you know, pick your battles, pal. I also got an email from a guy who was a guest on the show who was contributing on, and I'm going to quote him here, that shitty acoustic bit. he's asked if we would like to have him on the show to discuss some behind-the-scenes things there, and I think we got to reach out to him. What do you think?
I think there's some good potential there. I think we need to do our due diligence as heavy metal journalists, in quotes, to make sure that this isn't just some random person who's saying they were on it.
I totally believe this guy based on nothing, because why would you lie about this?
You know, there's all sorts of things that people can lie about. I mean, just look at the president. But I think we need to ask him. It's like a sports radio. I think when sometimes athletes will call in, like legitimate athletes, they maybe hear something on the show and like need to make a correction or something like that. And the people behind the scenes who get these phone calls will start to like ask the athletes questions like, oh, so how was playing at Ball State, knowing that they like played at Tulane or something, just to see if they could trip up these people so they don't get some rando on the air. So I think we have to be like, what color was Rob Halford's bucket hat when you played acoustically for him?
Good call. Do you think that one day we'll get to the level of podcasting where we just have trolls calling in like we're Mike Francesa?
I hope so. That means I could fall asleep on air like Mike Francesa too.
God bless that man for giving so little of a shit about his job.
The sports pope. Have you ever seen when people call in asking about pro wrestling? It's amazing.
Oh yeah, he hates it. He hates it so much. Anyway, fuck Mike Francesa. This isn't about that. So, figure that we got a couple of things going on. What I'm going to want you to do, and before we get into the show, I'm going to make a request. It's that you go to our Patreon and give us some dough, because I finally did the thing. I read K.K. Downing's autobiography, and we're doing a show specifically around that. I've been threatening to do it for probably 50 episodes now. I sat down, forced myself to read it, and it's a good episode. So there's our shameless plug for the week.
You really do have to force yourself to read some of these heavy metal autobiographies. They're not good.
They're really not. I no longer read for pleasure. I just read artists' autobiographies that I know are going to be bad.
Was this K.K. Downing autobiography recent?
It came out in 2018, I believe.
So there's a lot of hatred and venom towards Judas Priest?
Yes. The thing is, he's very passive-aggressive, or at least his co-writer is very passive-aggressive. It was maybe toning down his thoughts a little bit.
It's probably for the best, because I think this week there's an article saying that he's open to rejoining Judas Priest for their 50th anniversary tour.
That makes sense. Also, the closing chapter of the book is an extended call for please let me back in the band.
Please, baby, please. I've changed.
Yeah. He's been dealing with a number of legal and financial issues over the last decade or so. So he's gonna need this. Let KK Downing back in the band. But we'll get into that on the other episode. On this episode, there's a number of things that have been going on, been happening, and I figure we ought to maybe discuss them.
Yes, there's been a whole bunch of mush this past week.
A bunch of mush, but somebody's got to get through all of it, and I figure that's us. You know, it's a tough job.
And that's why Brennicide isn't on this week's show. He just he's had enough.
Yeah, he messaged us this morning saying, I'm sick. I don't want to do this episode, guys. Where do we start? There's a number of things here. What sounds the most appealing to you?
Appealing. There's a new Tool song.
Have you listened to it yet?
Nope.
I have not either. Because I no longer 12 years old, and it doesn't appeal to me like it did back then.
Yeah, I've never owned any of their albums, and this isn't one of those I've never liked them type things. It's like, yeah, some of the songs are great, but I have zero interest in them as people. And I think Maynard has proved himself to be like the angry soccer mom of the music world, and always wanting to speak to the manager. We just need to Photoshop him with like that really bad short blonde frizzy haircut that those types get. But he's just been a dick for so long that why should I give him my 10 minutes for their new song?
Yeah. This week I saw an ancient macro go around of Maynard saying, somebody asked me if my wines were vegan. Much to my horror, I found that they were, so I fixed that, and it shows him dipping his little sausage fingers with a piece of bacon into a vat of wine, ostensibly to own the libs, I guess. And it just reminded me that, man, this guy fucking sucks. For all of the pretension around opening your third eye or whatever and taking DMT with Joe Rogan, it really is, he's just a little mini boomer. That and all of his tirades about loving and kissing the troops, it's pretty tiring. So I don't want to give the guy a whole lot of attention because that's what he seems to crave, the Moby of nu metal, as it were.
What a little wiener. He went to West Point, didn't he?
He did.
And he dresses up like a riot police officer at some shows. So Maynard is the ultimate cop.
Maynard is a cop. We all know how we feel about those kinds of people, the feral hogs, as it were. So, you know, do we want to listen to this thing?
Tool lives matter.
Oh, God. You had suggested that maybe we listen to the song on the show. Is that a thing that you still want to do?
No, but if we think it's going to be good radio, we could try.
There's no way it's good radio. It's a 10-minute song, man.
I'm happy going through my life not hearing it.
It's fine by me. All right.
I have enough Tool fans saying, oh my God, it's so good. So,
yeah, I'm all right with just letting this event pass me by like so many others.
We could just keep making memes and getting angry responses from people.
Yeah, so what was it you did the other day that kicked off the hornet's nest of people that have never, ever read Toilet of Hell in their lives?
Ronnie Radke had posted on Twitter, like, full-on boomer racist meme saying essentially that, like, these recent spat of racist white power related shootings are like a media creation, and that actually people of color also commit mass shootings. And it was real dumb.
who was it? Was it Freddie Gibbs that uttered the immortal lines, "Shut that bitch ass up, Ronald"?
Vince Staples.
Sorry. Words to live by. Got a few people that were really mad that we have suddenly taken a socio-political tone, as one said.
Where have you been the past 5 years?
Have you ever seen anything I've ever done?
This isn't something new. It's really weird to be like, well, why are you doing this now? It's been years. Do you, like, just check this Toilet Tuesday to see who's putting out albums this week and that's it?
I guess it's possible, but that's so strange to me. Considering a number of our socio-political pieces have gone, I don't know, fairly viral or whatever. And there's, you know, that, and there's literally every episode of the show we've ever done where I went on some kind of unhinged rant. So
it's our calling card.
It really is. I can't shut up. So you not being aware of me not being able to shut up is enraging.
Listen to my 50-minute rant.
Yeah, exactly. So that was fun. Ronnie Radke, not to belabor that guy, he assaulted a teenager. He was implicated in a murder. He's a bad
person. Went to jail because of it.
Yeah. That was when Falling in Reverse happened, when he got out of jail from, I don't know, was it Against the Fates or whatever the fuck. He left that band and started this just horrific rap rock project afterwards. I wanted to say it was Fates Warning, just because that is going to piss off a lot of people.
Rap rock is the last refuge of the scoundrel.
It is very true. Well, not the very last stop. It gets there, though. The final destination is creating bro country music. In the case of Bobbert Kid Rock Richie, what you do is you take your family's fortune, right?
And fortune is the key word, because he is rich.
Rich as hell. Bob Richie Rich, more like it. You take your family's fortune, right? So you start a hip-hop career based on the music that's going on in the inner city nearby you that you don't visit because you live in an incredibly wealthy suburb. You take what they're doing, and then you do it yourself with a massive budget so you can fund yourself and not have to worry about things like getting a job. or selling CDs out of the back of your car. You gain a lot of notoriety because of your connections and your family fortune, and because of the color of your skin. You usurp the scene from the people around you that created it. And then once it's financially viable and you've developed enough of a white audience, you can completely abandon anything related to the music that you've appropriated, and you just become a chud bro country asshole. So it just follow those steps for success, and you'll be a platinum selling artist in no time, guys.
His entire career really is based on other people's work and identity.
Yeah.
Like, he's not even a country guy. He lives in the suburbs in a big estate.
In fucking Michigan. you know, not a part of the Confederacy. I'm not so good with history or geography, but I don't think those fly.
Yeah, I'm so tired of this guy. And he reared his greasy, gross-ass mustache head once again by this week's accusing Taylor Swift of, like, performing sexual favors to be famous?
Seems unlikely, considering Taylor Swift came from also an incredibly wealthy background that helped her finance her career.
And gained fame through being on a national television show.
What show was that?
She was, whatchamacallit? What's that stupid singing show that's still on TV somehow?
She was on a singing show?
Yeah. What's the big one with Simon Cowell?
American Idol?
Yes, I believe she was in that, but, like, didn't win, but she was on that.
I'm gonna have to look this up because, let's see.
Join us next week for white guys in their 30s trying to find out what show Taylor Swift was on.
I think she was... Oh, God damn it, I don't know how any of this shit works. What's a computer? I don't know, man. I think she was on America's Got Talent? Whatever, fuck this. It doesn't matter. Let's get back to the genesis of this as well. I believe it was that our friend Thomas Lee made some kind of... baffling statement.
Do you want to jump ahead with the Kid Rock thing? This is the same guy who was in Joe fucking Dirt.
Yeah, and he was great in Joe Dirt because I think he just played a version of himself.
Yeah, he was just himself. He was just some gross guy who was being gross to women, which, as we know, is a thing he does because he had a sex tape. And
yes,
Scott Stapp from Creed was there.
With Scott Stapp, and this is something that has been disappeared from the internet pretty well, because I have spent a lot of time trying to track it down.
This is like the Zapruder film for you?
Exactly. There were some lawsuits involved. I don't think it ever got released. To the best of my knowledge, Scott Stapp and Kid Rock. Kid Rock, it was basically just kind of becoming huge. He was on the road with Scott Stapp. Scott Stapp had hired a couple of hookers, and he got out his camcorder to film them getting it on with them. So, if it's out there, let me know. I can't find it. I wanted to run a Toilet of Hell article about it just to have it in perpetuity on the internet that I can point to and laugh at. Let me know if you guys find it. With what's fun, the Joe Dirt connection, by the way. I don't know if you saw yesterday that there was some movie that seemed really dumb called The Hunt that is canceled now because of the recent rash of shootings. Did you see that?
Well, I thought it was more canceled because our big dumb president complained about it on the internet.
I don't really know anything about it. Do you know anything about this movie?
I think it's... I mean, it's this idea of, like, hunting man for sport and as an entertainment form has been around for decades.
Yeah, something about the world's most dangerous game or...
Something like that.
Surviving the Game with Ice-T. Fantastic movie. You guys should watch that one.
And I think...
Or The Pest.
Is that John Leguizamo?
Yeah.
I think with this movie, it was hunting, quote-unquote, deplorables. And, like, I don't even think it was a left-leaning movie. I think it's actually a right-leaning movie.
Yeah, that sounds like a right-wing fever dream.
the poor deplorables who just have their ideas and love freedom are being hunted. Like, that's wrong. They're the real heroes. So that movie was going to be put out, I think, by Universal and is, as of right now, canceled.
Yeah. I have zero interest in this movie, aside from one little factoid that I saw posted up yesterday. And it is that Sturgill Simpson, probably one of the best country musicians of the last 10 years, was supposed to be in this movie playing the role of Kid Rock.
Should have had Mojo Nixon instead.
Is he still alive? He's probably still
alive.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. He probably looks pretty... I don't know. Kid Rock looks like shit, too, but Mojo Nixon might be too old.
Kid Rock looks like the Scream painting, but with a dumb hat.
That motherfucker has no chin. It is zero chin. There's no atoms there. So I would have liked to see that, because Sturgill Simpson seems like a pretty intelligent guy, a thoughtful person. I would have liked to see what he could do with the Kid Rock oeuvre.
You know, the movie will probably pop up, or a version of it, from The Asylum in a couple weeks and end up on Sci-Fi.
It's going to be a bad movie. I just wanted to see that bit with him. I wonder which era of Kid Rock he was playing. I hope he had the high-top kid-and-play fade from the early 90s. That would have been a good Kid Rock to be.
Well, maybe it could have been an amalgam. It could have had the flat-top hair while wearing a poncho made out of the Confederate flag.
That would be it. That would be so tight. Somebody let us know when a stream of this is available. We can see what all the hubbub is about.
It's like, there's no good conservative or libertarian horror movies. Don't try it. And yet people do, and they somehow end up on Netflix.
The only things that I can think of conservative horror movies would be like Bone Tomahawk, or from a more suspense angle, I guess, Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Bone Tomahawk was so meh. I was disappointed with that.
I liked it, even though it's horrifically racist.
Oh, it's super racist. I think I expected more of it, just because I like Kurt Russell and I like Westerns, and it was just like, this thing happens and then they deal with it, and there were like wasn't much there.
Yeah. I think that Brawl in Cell Block 99 was a better movie.
Is that Vince Vaughn?
That's Vince Vaughn, yes.
Who is, I believe, a libertarian.
He is also plays a criminal who is also a Blue Lives Matter guy. I want to say it sucks, but it really doesn't. It's a pretty entertaining movie.
It's just like a prison fight movie.
It's this guy has to get himself thrown deeper and deeper into prison to save his family by like snuffing out a dude. And it's incredibly violent and incredibly right wing and stupid. I'm trying to remember what the, bear with me here. Let's see. The director of Bone Tomahawk was S. Craig Zahler. The most recent movie he did was called Dragged Across Concrete, featuring Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn, in which the pair play crooked cops. But it's not like a... It's like Blue Lives Matter shit still. What's funny about this, and the reason I guess I've brought him up, is that Craig Zahler has a metal connection, and that he's had a couple of metal bands, and for the longest time... I think he was an obsessive metal archives guy.
Huh.
Yeah. So that all checks out with the, you know, the insidious right wing shit. Gotta say though, the work, not bad, not bad.
The sort of conservative libertarian horror movie that I'm aware of is, I don't know if you've seen it, the vampire movie Stakeland.
No, never seen it.
Not a bad movie, but there is an underlying kind of creepiness to it. It's like the one safe town, they're like, you can keep your guns, you need them, guns are good, and like there's some weird religious stuff. It's like nothing is really that subtle if you're kind of aware of politics. It's not a bad movie, but it's definitely there.
See, they could have thrown a kink in there. Let me be clear, if you like your guns, you can keep them for vampires. Let's see. I lost the track again. We were talking about Kid Rock.
We could shift over to another creep that was married to Pamela Anderson, if you want.
Please.
Thomas Lee of Motley Crue, and also a connection to something that we were talking about earlier and how rap rock is the last refuge of the scoundrel. He was in Methods of Mayhem.
Get Naked, woo! Featuring Fred Durst.
And they were on Ozzfest.
God damn.
Everything's connected.
There's a Crazy Town connection there, I'm sure.
I know the pieces fit. Nailed it. Every segue on the show so far.
Killing it. What did Thomas Lee Jones do?
He posted, this was on Instagram, I think, basically slamming Trump. And the internet went nuts for it.
What exactly did he say? Because I feel like I read this and I was mostly baffled by it.
You can actually make me look this up now. Tommy Lee Instagram. Tommy Lee riles up Trumpsters with lengthy political message on social media. AOL.com. I will click on that.
AOL.com, huh?
Still exists. Still a thing.
I have it open. Do you want me to do the reading on this one?
Yes.
You Trumpsters better pray that liberals never gain control of the White House again, because we are going to pay you back so fucking hard for all this shit. Planned Parenthood's on every damn corner. We're going to repaint Air Force One pussy hat pink and fly it over your beloved Bible Belt 6 days a week, tossing birth control pills, condoms, and atheist literature from the cockpit. We're going to tax your megachurches so bad Joel Osteen will need to get a job at Chick-fil-A to pay his light bill. Speaking of Chick-fil-A, we're buying all those and giving them to any LGBTQ person your sick cult leaders tortured with conversion therapy. Have fun with your new menu, you bigoted fucks. Try the McPence. It's a boiled, unseasoned chicken breast that you have to eat in the closet with your mother. We're going to gather up all your guns, melt them down, and turn them into a gargantuan metal mountain emblazoned with the face of Hillary Clinton. All parks will be named Rosa Parks ASAP. We're replacing Confederate statues with Black Lives Matter leaders and Mexican immigrants. Every single public school will be renamed after a child that was kidnapped by this regime. And after we fumigate the White House, we're repainting the whole thing rainbow. Fox News will be taken over and turned into a family refuge shelter. We're turning Hannity's office into a giant unisex bathroom with changing tables and free tampons. And every single time a Trumpster complains about any of the changes, we're adding an openly gay character to a Disney movie. What are your thoughts on that one, pal?
It's a little funny.
I guess what's frustrating to me is, like, this guy's vision of radical change involves letting the Disney Corporation have another openly gay character instead of, like, I don't know, socialized medicine.
Well, he doesn't have to worry about it, so it's not on his mind.
I know. It's just...
I don't read too much into something that Tommy Lee wrote on Instagram.
I know. It's just, it's frustrating to see, like, what one dumbass's vision of radical changes in this country that we desperately need, and it involves melting guns and turning them to a fucking Hillary Clinton mountain.
You know, I just laugh at it and kind of move on.
Well,
like I said, don't go to these people for in-depth, complicated, thoughtful political ideas. It's just some guy being a goof.
You're right. I guess you're right. You're right. I don't think that Thomas Lee Jones has done all the required reading. He doesn't know what praxis is.
he might not actually be able to read.
That's true. That is true. I have, yeah.
I think if there's something that you do want to get actually annoyed about, and possibly even a little ranty about, is how people, various degrees of the left, whatever you want to call them, saw this and loved it and thought, oh, Tommy Lee for president, oh, this is so great, and kind of forget about all of his spousal abuse problems and legal problems and all sorts of things.
Do you want to give us a refresher course on some of these things? Because over the years, people have forgotten. I know that one of our earliest episodes, like one of the very first ones, we just talked briefly about the various shitbags that make up Motley Crue.
So luckily I have Wikipedia open, and he helpfully has an entire section called Legal Troubles and Spousal Abuse.
Hmm. I noticed there weren't any women's shelters in his vision of the future.
In 1998, Lee served 6 months in county jail after pleading no contest to kickling. Oh my God, I'm tired. All right, take two. In 1998, Lee served 6 months in county jail after pleading no contest to kicking Pamela Anderson while she was holding their son Dylan. During an altercation over Anderson's refusal to call and ask her parents not to come over to the family's house, Lee assaulted his wife, leaving her with bruises, a torn fingernail, and fear for the safety of her two sons. Lee faced a 1998 lawsuit when he allegedly exposed a right-facing Nazi swastika tattoo on his arm to public scrutiny. The tattoo was actually a left-facing swastika. In 1996, Lee had pleaded no contest to criminal charges of battery against a Jewish photographer after Lee attacked the man outside the famous Viper Room in Los Angeles. When the photographer sued Lee, the swastika tattoo, which has since been removed, was said to be visible, and Lee's lawyers argued it would inflame the jury and create unfair prejudice against Lee. Lawyers are scum. Shortly after claiming that the introduction of the tattoo into the court record would produce prejudice, Lee denied its existence. In 1999, Lee was arrested in North Carolina after instigating a riot during the 1997 concert at the Greensboro Coliseum. Allegedly, Nikki Sixx made racist comments to a black security guard, suggesting that the crowd attack him. Sixx and Lee were said to have poured beer over the security guard's head.
I remember that now. Yeah. Christ. Sorry, go ahead.
In September 2007, yes, everything is connected, everything fits, Lee was kicked out of the MTV Video Music Awards ceremony after engaging in a fight with Kid Rock.
Incredible.
Kid Rock was cited for assault on Lee and pleaded guilty.
Incredible. I love how we can come full circle with this one.
This is the segue episode.
Just nailing these fucking segues, man. Professional broadcasters over here. So yeah, that's pretty cool to, like, you know, attack your wife while she's holding an infant. That's pretty tight stuff. Think that maybe, you know, this guy might have some kind of issues with women. Just, I don't know if any kind of, there any kind of like history with Motley Crue revolving around that. I can't piece it together. Someone smarter than me is going to have to figure this out.
It's not us.
Yeah, that's above our pay grade. It's a premium episode. Did you ever watch The Dirt?
No, I do not care about Motley Crue whatsoever.
Yeah. I bought the book, and it's, you know, another one of those biographies that's just sitting for whenever I need to feel 5 hours of pain. I still haven't cracked it. Look forward to that one, I guess. This is kind of fun, though, that this guy from, when was it, 1998, he had a swastika tattoo, has, I guess, rebranded himself as a woke resistance guy.
He's a big PETA guy because Pamela Anderson is, too.
Interesting. Again, it's also, I don't know what the word is for it, it's like millionaire woke.
Yeah, it's activism from afar, and it's usually with like the worst organizations.
Yeah. I nobody wants to see some just like ungodly wealthy guy like browbeating you for how you're living your life. That's pretty lame.
But because they're wealthy and possibly have a blue check mark on social media, lots of people will get behind them.
That's true. I think it's a free speech issue that you can't swear at blue check accounts without getting suspended.
See, that's why you have to be creative. You can't say, I hope you die. You have to say, I hope you stub your toe really badly and it hurts for a couple of days.
If only I had that restraint. Okay, we got these washed up has-beens, being scummy. What else are you seeing?
Isn't that enough? Isn't that what most of our show is?
Don't let me think on that too hard.
There's just so many bad people out there. We can't help it.
It's true. God damn.
We could talk about a good-ish thing if you want.
I mean, I'm open to it, but I'm a little skeptical. What are you saying?
The band While She Sleeps, a band we have probably never, ever, 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 ever mentioned on this show and possibly the site, has put out a free t-shirt design that's supposed to bring awareness to like how important merch sales are for bands, especially in comparison to like streaming.
Huh. That's kind of weird. I think most bands that do things for awareness are like picking a charity or whatever, but what's going on with While She Sleeps?
So the t-shirt is, it's just like a white box with white lettering that says, one t-shirt is the equivalent to 5,000 streams on Spotify. 76% of all music in 2019 is streamed and not bought physically or digitally. Band merchandise is the most direct way of supporting an artist. And I guess this is just a design that anyone can use to make t-shirts. And that's it. Like, I've seen this reposted, retweeted by a bunch of bands and musicians, and it's a nice sentiment. I don't really see how this makes any sort of difference or does anything. This is like a tweet that gets 20,000 likes, 1,000 retweets, and doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, because it's a meme. It's not a t-shirt.
It's like, well, actually, this land was stolen, so this is what America's all about type tweets. It's like, yeah. You're right. Yeah. Now what?
I agree with you. What can I do about it? So it's who's gonna print these shirts and who's gonna buy them?
I don't know. That's Redbubble.com.
Yeah, that's the truest thing in the world. Some dude is just gonna steal that design. Lots of dudes are gonna just copy and paste that design and put it on a Redbubble site, hoping some idiot will pay $30 for one.
Cafe Press.
Yeah, exactly. What is While She Sleeps, anyway? It sounds like a metalcore band or something.
Yeah, probably. I don't think we've ever actually listened to them.
I got to... The name itself is very evocative of a certain place and time that I don't recall super fondly.
Lots of spin kicks?
Less spin kicks, more like preteen predation kind of thing. It's interesting. It's an interesting thing. The sentiment is true. This is something that's been happening since the Napster days, and that bands say we no longer make money from our music. It seems like a rebrand of the Metallica struggle. Which I agree. It's tough. It sucks that you can't make money on an album. Because Spotify has essentially decided that their service is more valuable than the actual thing that fuels it. And I don't know a solution to it. I don't think there is one.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that people aren't putting forth solutions. When I say people, I mean like well-known bands. It's kind of just like, we don't get paid anything for these songs, but everyone's streaming. That's not right. And it's like, cool, I agree. But what do you got? It's kind of like, I see it almost as like the minimum wage fight that's been going on. It's kind of like, we should increase minimum wage. Yeah, absolutely. What you have. Some people are like, well, it should be $13. Some people are like $15. Some people think it should be $20. And it's like, that's all good. Let's figure something out. And some places have.
Yeah.
Some states have been like $15. Boom, done. And it's been a boon to these people, and it hasn't hurt business at all.
Yeah.
It's just like, you just talk about it, and you can't like get bogged down in the fight. You can't be like, well, it's 13 is fine. Well, why 13? Why not 15? It's same thing with this. It's just like, I don't know. Everyone say 15 cents for a stream.
Yeah.
For one song. Something like that. And there's no one out there kind of leading the fight for that. It's just shouting into the darkness.
Yeah, I mean, with a thing like minimum wage, you've got so much opposition from business that you're really on an uphill battle to get anything through. And the solution to that, is through collective action by the workers, right? We're talking about like a union, people banding together and saying that you need my labor, I will deny it unless I can get what I want. And in most people that need this, there is no such thing as like a union for them. I've seen in recent years like fast food workers unions are popping up, which I think is great, because you know, people are trying, the powerful business tries to cut down the lowest paid workers. That's just what happens. It seems like to me there is an option for artists to band together and form some kind of collective action, if it weren't for the labels getting in the way.
Yeah, it really is like everyone against the actual bands when it comes to this, because I know like Google and Amazon and all these other places like successfully sued to like not have more streaming revenue given out, and like the bands are just left there. I think if you had a band like a Metallica level or a Taylor Swift level or like massive bands who have a lot of power, even if they took the lead on this and said, you know what, take our music off, like you're not helping out all these little bands out there, I think that's when some people would listen.
Well, to go ahead and square a circle again, Tool put all their shit on streaming just over the last couple weeks.
Yes, they did, and everyone went nuts, and oh my God, you can now listen on Spotify because you couldn't listen on YouTube or other places that have had their songs and albums for literally over a decade.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, I'm not expecting a whole lot out of this band, but you could have put a stake in the ground with this. You know, we were joking about the comments to all of these things saying that a new Tool record is coming out, and people saying like, I don't know where I can buy a CD.
I don't know. It's like, it was all marketing purposes for doing this, obviously. It's not like they had some sort of actual stance on this. They just waited until their new album was going to come out, and then they were able to put all their music on these places so that people can go nuts and stream a lot, and they could get articles out of it saying Parabola was streamed over a million times, whoopity-doo.
Yeah, that's like $150. Great job, guys.
It's more bacon to put into wine.
Good God. And I guess it's that, like, I don't know, a band like Tool isn't hurting for money. They're probably like, sure, this is an extra revenue stream. It doesn't really matter. But I don't see a way out of this other than collective action of the people that actually make the thing that you want. And I think you know, there's the outside solution of bands that do Bandcamp only. I think that's a great idea. I don't argue with that at all. It's just that generally it's bands that, you know, like I care about that have like a few thousand listeners across the world.
Yeah, with me, it's just, you know, I don't really buy anything off Bandcamp, just because there's nothing I'm particularly interested in actually owning. What's good about Spotify for me is that, like, I can pick two or three songs that I like, and it's just in a playlist and lives there forever. I'm never going to buy an album anyway from, I don't know, Kitty, but maybe I want to listen to Brackish once in a while, and there it is, and that's great, and it's convenient.
I'm surprised you don't still have that record in your CD binder.
Never owned it.
Huh, okay.
But I have seen them twice.
Huh. Yeah, and I mean, I don't think Kitty's a band anymore, right?
No, they're not.
Yeah. I mean, and once you're done, I guess, it's like being dead. Just throw me in the trash.
You know, as someone who has bands and albums on Spotify, yeah, it would be cool to get a little bit of cash out of it, but I'm on such a small level that I'm just happy it's widely available for people to listen to.
Certainly. I think that's kind of the rub for everyone. Everyone, when everyone is kind of struggling with this, it's like, I guess I'll just do this because this is the, you know, basically the path of least resistance to get what I really want. And in the process, we kind of, everybody handicaps himself, you know?
And eventually we have to get this show on Spotify.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to allow it. I've tried several times.
But how do some other things get on, like, with their first like two or three episodes they get on, but we don't.
I don't know, and it definitely doesn't chat my ass. I'm not mad. I'm laughing, actually.
Someone help us. Someone figure that out.
In the meantime, Musicians Union. I don't know how that works. Seems like it might be impossible. But let's look into that. You know, local spin kick 402.
They'd probably have to hook up with another established union, AFSCME or one of the other ones, and then pay dues. And I think that's where a lot of people would trip up, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a challenge too. I think that there's this idea of, you know, some bands get it that when you're in a scene, you need to work together with other people, and other bands are like, well, this is me against everybody. That kind of gets in the way of any kind of collective action when you look at the people in doing the same things as you, as your competition, rather than people that are also struggling.
I got it. I got the solution. I know how we can get people to pay dues that are in bands. You advertise to them that they have to sell quote-unquote tickets to open up for a band called Metal Union.
Oh my
and
god.
Every month you sell tickets and you're actually getting protection.
In certain circles of genres, you can also say paying your dues gets you the aid of our legal team.
You get so much scene credit.
I think that's a brilliant idea. Basically, I'm going to set up shop in the Northeast as an unscrupulous promoter that's secretly unionizing bands without their knowledge.
Hey, kid, you want fair labor agreements?
Man, that's the ticket, man. That's the solution. I think we just cracked this one.
Just going to stand outside FET holding up a sign, honk if you love musical justice or something like that.
What is it? Norma, it's not Norma Jean. What is it, the movie? I think the movie is Norma Jean just holding up a sign at every show. Union!
Solved it. Now on to world peace.
I didn't really want to talk about this one, but I figure we probably should. This is uncomfortable territory. But I think we would be, I guess, cowardly if we didn't acknowledge what happened last week.
Yeah, people have come to expect us to tackle these unpleasant issues. Yay, us. We're so lucky.
There was a guy that shot up a nightclub in Dayton, Ohio last week, which isn't, like, I guess, super shocking news, given that there are mass shootings that happen all the time in this diseased country. But this one hit a little bit closer to home and has made me reflect on things a little bit. And I've read a lot of the thoughts from people that are, I guess, more attuned to this than I am, or more susceptible to some of the shit happening here. So I don't want to come at this from an angle of being super informed. I just want to maybe share some thoughts that I had read and reflected on about it, if that makes sense.
I get it.
Is that a cowardly enough opening?
Well, I think there's on both sides of the issue. There you go.
We like to take the centrist position on this podcast. It's a proven fact. This guy, Connor Betts, I think was his name. I was having dinner with some friends last Sunday, and I looked at Twitter, and I realized that this guy had kind of a small presence, but a presence nonetheless in the circles that we travel in on Twitter. I'm not sure that I had ever seen him before, but I had a bunch of mutual followers with the guy, which gave me a real weird feeling. Apparently he had kind of ingratiated himself into metal left Twitter, which is a group that I guess I'm lumped in with as well, and you maybe to a lesser extent. I don't know how you feel about that.
I'm on the outskirts, yeah. At best.
And it made me feel a lot of very strange things. That this guy that had kind of ingratiated himself with people that I know and had spouted platitudes about causes that I believe in would then turn around, arm himself to the teeth, and slaughter a whole bunch of innocent people. That has been a very strange feeling indeed. And the reaction that I was seeing from people that, specifically women within this circle, was a little bit, enlightening to me, in that it was, for a lot of women, in this particular scene, it's not a surprise at all. It's the opposite of a surprise. It's expected when somebody, a man in leftist spaces, is violent or misogynistic or basically using a cover of political justice to basically get away with abuse. And it's not something I had thought about a lot because it's not something that affects me, you know? You know, that's the angle that of privilege that I have of being a white dude and shit. So this guy, apparently, he had a porno grind band. I don't know what, if any, we've said about porno grind on this show other than it's fucking gross. I don't know what else there is to say. Like, the biggest band in that scene, if you can call it a big band or whatever, is probably like Cemetery Rapist, and I'm pretty sure that guy is an actual rapist. This is a scene that foments nothing but just toxic misogyny and violence, and the music itself is atrocious from every conceivable angle. It's not good to listen to. It's bad, it's lazy, and more than anything, it seems like it's a boys' club for disgusting people.
It's like NSBM. There's only like one point to it. NSBM is like, the only point is to be racist, horrible Nazi shitheads. Porno grind, the only point of it really is to be a violent misogynist and say awful things about women, things that you want to do, and all terrible things. Otherwise, it wouldn't be that genre. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that... So, one of Connor Bett's bandmates, this guy Jesse Kriegbaum, he did an interview with Vice, and he said he's been working to scrub the band's presence from the internet. The band that he was in was called Minstrel Munchies. Albums that they put out include Preteen Daughter Pussy Slaughter, and shit like songs with title Sexual Abuse of a Teenage Corpse. So basically, pretty much the most disgusting shit you can come up with and putting it out there. And his bandmate said, I feel shitty for letting him be in the band doing those lyrics because I saw it as a joke. Let's play this and we'll shock some people. And then people we know will laugh. And he was like, yeah, fuck yeah, we'll do this. And he said, Jesus Christ, how much of this was like real life for him? And what's the joke? Like, what is the punchline here? Like, it's funny to rape and kill women and children? Like, is that the joke? You didn't exactly nail the landing on this shit.
Yeah, I think it's just a weird section of angry 20-something-year-old men. Like, probably concentric circles with, like, incels. Like, it all kind of fits into that disturbing, we're just joking, but we're not actually joking.
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of NSBM acts, before doubling down over the last couple of years, would say it was some kind of joke as well. There's nothing to this. You're basically just... You're not creating art because there's nothing to create here. You're following the same template as 1,000 other bands that also went nowhere and also filled with stupid incels.
And labels shouldn't sign these bands. They shouldn't put this stuff out. And yet, here we are.
The best thing about MySpace going down was that it swallowed the internet presence of a million of these bands.
They still exist. I actually accidentally came across one when looking for a label to put out my band's record a year or two ago, I had reached out to a better known label who had liked what we'd done but just couldn't put it out at the time and had recommended another one. He's like, this person will put it out probably. It, you know, it sounds like you'd fit in. And it was a porno grind label. And it felt real fucking gross. And we said no.
Can't imagine. I don't know. Maybe on the next record you can do those terrible cricket vocals. It's inward breathing. Learn how to fucking scream, you loser. I think it's just a thing to think about, maybe in our own lives, like not letting the dudes you know skate with shit that is a quote-unquote joke, because it's a scary thing that people with bad intentions can fly under the radar by adopting, you know, your cause. You have to be vigilant, and you have to work to basically pick these people out.
We're kind of in a transition phase, I guess, in the genre itself, and kind of recognizing a lot of these problematic things. And there's always going to be people that resist it and say stupid shit and bother us on Facebook and Twitter. But I think now that the world is kind of changing and we're following along in bits and pieces, even kind of saying like, Cannibal Corpse, like some of them early songs and albums are not good. And it's good that they don't really do that stuff anymore, but
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of death metal, it follows the same tropes, you know, like, violence against women, these elaborate rape and murder fantasies, like they were able to skate with it because their riffs were better than porno grind.
Well, and now we're paying attention and we're talking about it, so that's a positive thing.
It is. It's just, it is terribly frustrating sometimes to basically feel like I have been a part of something so stupid and regressive for so long.
But we learn. That's life. You're not the same person you were 10 years ago. You're not the same person you were 20 years ago. So it's important to look back and recognize that. And we're always trying to be better.
Yeah. Before we record every episode, we have a little chant where we put our hands together and put them down on three and yell, "Do better."
And then we go, "Tomb mold, tomb mold, tomb."
What's your beef with Tomb Mold?
Oh, nothing. I have no problem with them. It's just a handful of people that we know, and we're friends on Twitter and all that. We're just really, 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 really into them for like a 2-week period. And it's just my usual stance of being averse to hype.
Hey, don't subtweet here. Call them out. Call out Kit.
I love you, Kit. I love you.
Yeah, man. I think for if we want to have a genre that is welcoming and inclusive and safe, and we want to a better world, one that isn't stupid and violent and regressive, we have to be on top of our shit. And we got to work harder. And I think that's a thing that is going to stick with me for a bit. It is a horrific, stupid, stupid tragedy of what happened in Dayton. And I don't know, man. I don't know what to say about it. It's fucked up.
I don't like guns. Guns are bad.
Hey, I got to get out of this. Is there a lighter note that we can close it on?
Rotting Christ is not going to be on Psycho Las Vegas because they were lazy as fuck and didn't fill out their visas until like 2 weeks before the show.
I've never related harder with a band.
And the people from Psycho Las Vegas talked about it, and I think it's on Facebook and wherever else, saying like, we offer bands to do the visa paperwork for them. Like, we have people that take care of this, and we've worked with other bands and done this. And like, the label wouldn't respond, the band wouldn't respond, and it went on for weeks and weeks, and now it's too late, so they're just like, oh, bye, you can't play anymore.
I love it. It's like, Carl, you take care of it. Now Bob will take care of it, and he just sits in their Gmail folder.
And you don't get to play the big Las Vegas festival with all the doom bands and the pot smoke hanging over everyone in the pool area.
Yeah, well, you're doing yourself a favor. It's a form of punishment to have to go out wearing all black in the fucking desert.
You don't have to wear black. You can. I think the fans deserve Rod and Christ wearing floaties and like hitting each other with pool noodles while they play.
I'm throwing this out there, man. I keep seeing it, folks in metal like making jokes about how dedicated they are to the cause. It's 105 degrees outside today in Texas. Joking about like how dedicated they are to the cause that they wear black jeans in this fucking miserable heat. I want no part of this. I'm fucking short shorts, halfway buttoned up short sleeve shirt every day. Fuck any kind of metal credibility. I'm out here trying to stay fucking hydrated and breezy.
Start a new genre, sandals metal.
Okay, well, I'm not going to go that far. I still think that men's toes are an abomination and that you shouldn't wear flip-flops unless you're at the beach.
Yeah, no sandals, especially when like people are at stores or they're just out in public. Your feet are gross, dude. Stop it.
Yeah, man.
I can't imagine black metal feet. Ugh.
Oh, God. Yeah, like when Kit and I went to Austin Terror Fest, there were dudes like wearing their full leather jackets and full black pants and leather boots. It's at least 100 degrees outside, and it's like, nobody cares. Nobody cares that you're a metal dude or that you got these boots custom made or whatever. Everybody's out here just miserable and sweating and trying to have a good time. If that's what you need to feel good about yourself, I guess that's fine, but it seems pretty fucking miserable to me.
You don't need to rep how metal you are at a metal show. You're already there. We know.
You paid the ticket. You have the wristband. Telling you, short shorts metal is the way to go.
Like John Stockton short?
Yes, exactly. That's how short mine are right now.
Occasionally a ball hangs out.
You know, you might want to wear underwear.
Or you can wear swimsuits and you have the protective netting.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, swimsuit summer. I'm going to fucking sew a Dark Throne patch on him or whatever so I can at least have, you know, it's like a security blanket. You gotta sew a patch on something so people know you're metal at all times.
Fenriz approves.
That's your thought for the week. Get out there, have a good time, don't die in the heat, don't die for metal. That's stupid.
Live for metal, fight for metal, and that's it.
Yep. This has been the Toilet of Hell Radio Show, and I love you.
Mwah.
listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.